You're listening to Tech Tank, a bi-weekly podcast from the Brookings Institution exploring the most consequential technology issues of our time. From racial bias in algorithms to the future of work, Tech Tank takes big ideas and makes them accessible. You're listening to Tech Tank. I am your co-host, Dr. Nicole Turner-Lee, and I am excited about today's conversation. As these discussions around AI intensify, they all circle back to data. Data is the fuel that shapes machine learning algorithms, neural networks, and now generative AI. And it can make both granular decisions and, depending on the type of data, generate visual, audio, and text extractions, much like we're seeing in today's large language models. While many researchers and advocates have pointed to data as being the grand of all evils, and some maybe grand of opportunity, when it comes to autonomous decisions, we need to have a conversation around equitable data. And government has a huge interest in this, from how much is being collected to the quality of formats, and most importantly, if it's inclusive and available to all. Keeping government in check is the focus of our conversation today, and I'm very excited to be joined by, guess what, the U.S. Chief Data Scientist. Dr. Dominique Duval-Diop is a person who is in this distinguished role, and she is responsible for this nexus between data, tech, and equity to keep federal agencies accountable in the design and deployment of AI models, and to drive equity in the information that is available for infrastructure investments and other federal programs. She's no stranger to this. Prior to joining the White House, she was an American Association for the Advancement of Science Fellow, where she deployed similar skills. And she's also an economic geographer. Now, Dr. Dominique, I'm not going to hold that against you as a sociologist, but I'm looking forward to this wonderful conversation because your role is quite interesting, not since I met you to me, but I'm sure to many of our listeners who are out there today. So let's have a conversation about your role as a chief data scientist, and let's talk about equitable data. Dominique, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole. It's a real privilege and an honor to be a part of this show. And I think talking about this role is so interesting because there's only been three.
Right.
only three. And the first was DJ Patel. And since he took on this role in the Obama administration, the mission really hasn't changed, in my opinion. And that mission, my mission, is to responsibly unleash the power of data to benefit all. So how I do that includes harnessing the power of something called equitable data. And we want to use that data to inform the development of policies that, instead of entrenching inequity, that policies and programs that advance equity, and using data to hold ourselves accountable to tracking our progress on that. So I think this role is so important because having this role at the highest level of government makes sure that all agencies are moving forward at the same pace, at the same time. We all know our agencies have different capacities and different types of resources available to them, but we need to take a whole of government approach to designing better policies and programs and using data to help us to do that. Having this role in the White House enables us to bring agencies together so that they can share their lessons learned, their approaches and their successes, as well as there's lessons learned from the failures, so that we can all move forward together while holding ourselves accountable to the public that we serve.
And I love that because I think you and I, we keep bumping into each other at like AI related events where, you know, data is in and of itself like this commodity of the new AI economy. But I love what you're talking about because having a U.S. chief data scientist really ensures that, you know, not only are we evidence-based in the decisions that we make, but how you've termed it, we're looking at both the opportunities and obviously the challenges that the data may present. You mentioned this term equitable data, which, as all of us who have been following President Biden and Vice President Harris know, that equity has been really core to their agenda, whether it's an economic agenda or educational agenda, et cetera. Tell us a little bit more about the term equitable data, what that means to the Biden-Harris administration, and how you define that, right? Because I have so many things going through my head right now. I'd love to hear, you know, how you're landing on that term itself.
Yeah, well, Nicole, I mean, we talk about equity, right? And it just seems kind of amorphous and vague. But when we talk about equitable data, this is something that can help us make it more concrete and quantifiable. So equitable data are those that allow us to rigorously assess whether or not government programs and policies that we're putting out there are yielding consistently fair, just, and impartial treatment of individuals and communities. Right. So it's not just the data itself, though. It's the practice. It's how you use that data, how you approach it, and how you harness it to really shed light on those concrete actions that we need to take to improve outcomes for underserved communities. So equitable data is the data, but it's also the targeted action. It's not data for data's sake, but it's turning data into action that results in a more equitable
And that
outcomes.
makes a lot of sense, right? Because a lot of what you've been working on in the administration is ensuring that we're creating programs that have some level of, racial equity or gender equity or equity by sexual orientation. So I kind of now seeing this, right? What you're talking about is not just a term, but it's the application of that term. Do you see your role advancing, I guess, a narrative of the progress that this administration has made around creating equity and more inclusive systems? Like, are you able to measure where this is actually making a difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've put forth so many different programs, and at the same time, we are also advancing on how we do our work and changing and shifting how we do our work by employing data and having that really inform our design of programs. We're looking at customer experience and really understanding how people live the process of applying for programs and what are the challenges and barriers that that presents, and really learning from from stakeholders and people who depend on our services, so that we can do things better. So this whole user customer experience, but we're also looking at putting data out there. So being open and transparent about tracking our progress. And we've done this in a number of ways. So let's talk about the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law or the Inflation Reduction Act. We've put together a data set that allows us to, present early indicators of progress of where these funds are going, how we're distributing our resources, and is that distribution following those historic patterns of inequity, or are we breaking that? And if we're falling short, what are we doing in terms of outreach, in terms of technical assistance to support communities that are going after these funds? What can we do to ensure that agencies are targeting their data, taking their data, and addressing this wicked problem of data sharing, for example, across silos within agencies and across agencies, so that we can do better about understanding the challenges that are preventing communities from accessing our resources, but then also how can we tap into those opportunities so we can blend and braid the funding from different funding sources, so that we can really help rebuild communities in a more holistic way.
Wow, that is so interesting. So let me ask you this. Are you the person then when the White House puts out the fact sheets that helps to sort of give that data or work alongside the agencies? I'm just curious because I read those fact sheets.
When you talk about, are you talking about those Investing in America
Yes,
Bipartisan
yes,
Infrastructure Law fact
yes.
sheets? Actually, it's my team.
Okay.
It's my team that puts out those fact sheets. Yes, yes.
I have worked in policy for over 20 years, right? And I just am always like very impressed by the administration's ability to actually put out information. But over the years, and I'm just going to put it on you, right? They have come up with some really good quantitatively driven fact sheets where it makes it easier for people like myself in the think tank to really glean that and then expand upon it. So thank you, Dominique,
You're welcome, and I'd like to thank my team as well. The teams I have Presidential Innovation Fellows and U.S. Digital Core Fellows on my team, and these are programs that one the PIF program was started up by DJ Patel, I think, and these are programs that we really have to address our data capacity, right? And these kinds of programs really help build
Well,
that.
that makes a lot of sense. And I've been a huge fan of those programs over the years. In particular, now it's all making sense. I mean, if you're listening, Tech Tank listeners, we're actually getting a nice preview into how we're making decisions when it comes to our chief data scientist here, Dominique Duval Diop, who's actually really laying out that the fact that, everything that we do involves some level of data. So thank you for that, because I think that's something that, as I said earlier in my intro, right, we tend to think of data nowadays as artificial intelligence driven and not necessarily for what you're talking about in terms of efficiency. What challenges, though? I mean, you're dealing with a lot of agencies that may not have that same ethic when it comes to data collection or integrity or how they actually evaluate that. What does your department do as well to sort of help them maintain that level of data quality and coordination with other data sets that may be available to them?
Look, Nicole, this issue of data quality and how we collect it in ethical ways is really critically important, and it's something that was set out in the blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights, if you recall, really looking at how we collect our data to ensure that we're protecting privacy, that we're ensuring that the data collection is representative.
Yep.
Right. And because we know that when we talk about challenges and biases, it starts first with the data, how the data is collected and whether or not it's represented. And so we are really helping to work with agencies to invest in their data, infrastructure, their capacity to, effectively share and curate government agency data, and ensuring that it's used in the in appropriate ways. And so there's a big challenge, and there's variation in levels of capacity. But this issue of the federal data workforce and making sure that agencies are tapping into the best minds who are using the most, innovative, up-to-date tools is really something that's critically important. And so we've really worked to advance data science talent surges, AI talent surges, so that agencies can bring on that talent on board and really help address the hiring, the barriers to hiring, and ensuring that we have a greater diversity in the people that are coming into public service who have these kinds of
And
skills.
that makes so much sense, because part of what we find with these new autonomous models, right, is that they really harness so much data that it's not very easy to get the causality of a variety of relationships that you might have to glean, as a former program analyst or a current program analyst. It's a very different animal that you're dealing with there. Do you see that the United States will develop that resiliency when it comes to workforce? I'm just curious, going forward, or are we going to see the government sort of behind because a lot of these folks are going to Silicon Valley?
Look, Nicole, we can't afford to be behind on this. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing is that people really buy into public service. They want to help support this objective that all of us hold, which is to really do better and address these historic systemic inequities that we have in how we invest our resources and how we make these resources available to people who really need them. I think that we see more and more people who are committed to that and who are joining federal government. But again, making it easy for them to apply for these jobs, making it easy and understandable and accessible. So we're not just talking about the typical people, but also making our process accessible even to people, for example, who have disabilities. They bring a lot to the table. Everyone brings so much to the table. And so if we balance this commitment to public service with the opportunities set out in all of these executive orders and guidance documents that show how committed the Biden-Harris administration is to advancing equity in everything that we do, including how we institute government use of responsible AI, people are really compelled by that.
Yeah, and I think that's really like very interesting to talk about, right? Because at the end of the day, we need this data for, not just ensuring that we're meeting our objectives and we're creating a fair world, but we need that data, I would also assume, for congressional action, right? Going forward, that we're grounding any type of future legislation in evidence-based policy frameworks, which makes me think a little bit about. I'm gonna go down memory lane now. I just want to remind you, like, I am not this old, but as a sociologist, you triggered something in me as I was listening to you. This emphasis on equity, I think, is really important because government over the years has used data in the way that it seemed fit, right? You think about Patrick Moynihan and how he used data to make suggestions around the Black family household, right? And the fact that there were not enough men in the household. Now, Technically, the quantitative numbers could have been accurate, but the data also presented another side where we saw, this dismantling of Black families, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you think about those kinds of examples, part of the challenges that I know I deal with in my work is that we don't have the storytelling or the data coming from the community themselves, right? We have a lot of data that is generated on top of communities versus data that's coming from within the communities. So in the case of Moynihan not having enough representation, inclusivity, and maybe some of his samples to suggest that instead of looking at it as a deficit, it's actually resiliency among Black family households to be able to get past some of those circumstances. I'm curious, when you talk about getting data that is more towards an equity lens, are you finding ways to get them from local constituents and other stakeholders so that you can have more inclusive, full, robust storytelling or qualitative evidence that comes from the people themselves?
That's such a great question, Nicole, and I really hear what you're saying, because sometimes data has been used as a weapon
Yes,
against our
yes,
communities,
yes.
right? So, this public participation and really having a conversation with the communities and the stakeholders that we're serving is something that the Biden-Harris administration is really committed to. And so there's been a number of actions that our agencies and also the White House have put forth to really start to more fully engage the public in the regulations that we're putting out there, the policies and programs that we're putting out there. And I want to point your attention to a current activity that we're leading where there's a federal framework and a set of guidelines for public participation and community
Oh,
engagement
wow.
that the White House Office of Management and Budget is leading. I think they have a request for information out there right now with a set of listening sessions and consultations and customer feedback surveys that that they're putting out there to really help more enriching how we engage with the public. So not just putting a complex legislation out there and then expecting regular folks to come and engage and give us an understanding of how these things are really going to impact them. We know that that's not accessible,
Yep.
right? And so being able to sit with people, in a more intimate setting and have listening sessions and crowdsourcing information, having people provide information in the way that makes sense to them as opposed to within a very rigid engagement process, right? So I think that's one way. We really need to better understand impact. And so
Yes.
looking at, but we can't wait for programs to be implemented and then you have an impact assessment, an RCT that's developed years down the line, right? And so really in the course of making policies and designing programs, making sure that we are regularly reaching out to the public to to get feedback on how we're doing as we're doing it. I think that is also a real shift and a in that the Biden-Harris administration has put forth, really changing the way we do business and really softening that bureaucracy and ensuring that we're having kind of a conversation as we implement
Yeah, I
programs.
mean, I think that's really a key point. I mean, I'm thinking about the recent Biden Harris student loan forgiveness stuff. It's been very quantitative, but done in a way I think where everyday people can understand the impact. I just have found it to be very accessible in this White House, very consistent when it comes out with new information and new data points, that there are ones in which you don't have to be an economist, to understand.
Right. And we have different types of data that we put out
Yes,
there
yes.
for specific types of programs like you mentioned, but just the data that we put out there, for example, the Census Bureau or the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we put that information out there. We need to make it more easily consumable
Yes.
by the public and other data points that the public can use, researchers, diverse researchers can use to be able to understand and assess and hold us accountable using that data. So this whole open data and putting data out there is really also a critical responsibility that we need to do because it's more than just the federal government. We have to be in partnership with academia, with the private sector, with civil society, and in order to be in partnership, we have to have that open and that transparency around the data that's informing all these programs.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's kind of sort of like my next pivot on this transparency issue. I just spent a couple of days up at the University of Wisconsin for an AI conference where we got into this really heavy conversation on the trade-offs that we make in AI. And I'm curious from you because it was, you know, and having this conversation, something that continues to resonate for me are the proxies that actually go alongside like many of the federally protected characteristics or come in place of, you know, other variables which should be much more explainable, but for whatever reason, we can't access that data, right? Because there's either implications with personally identifiable information or it's just off limits. You manage as a chief data scientist these trade-offs, right? Because you want to be transparent, but then there's some times that we don't have the data available. We may have to rely upon proxies like, you know, your zip code or your age, you know, or that might be federally protected, but you know what I mean? Like proxies that may or may not necessarily be the true data point, but at the same token could get us into places that could result in bias, you know, if not opportunities for us to understand bias better. Just curious, what's your daily responsibility of those trade-offs, Dominique? Because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking to myself, you have a big role, honey. It's a very big role. There's just gotta, like, you probably have no time in your day where you're like, okay, let me just get a glass of coffee or something and just sit down and think about how my day is gonna go. Like, how do you manage that particular part, which I think is probably most vulnerable when we think about the commodity of data?
Well, you know, that's a really big question, and tough question. And I think that, you know, it's not something that I am doing on my own. We have a whole team of people across federal government that is working on this. So we have the Chief Data Officer Council, and we have the Chief AI Officer Council as well, that has been created as a result of, you know, the AI executive order. All agencies are being mobilized to kind of address this issue of the quality and the appropriateness of the data that's being used in the design and deployment, you know, the training, the testing, and operation of AI. And so we have also a number of guidance documents that's been put out there, most recently M memo management memo 24-10, which really sets out, you know, those minimum practices for AI that can impact the rights and safety of vulnerable communities, of underserved communities, right? And so we really need to ensure this issue of being proactive.
Yes.
You know, this proactiveness, instead of just waiting and just assuming that, you know, there's this assumption that AI and data is objective and it's not biased. And so I think that there's a realization that is really evident in all of these policy documents that the Biden-Harris administration has put out there, that no, data and AI, you know, suffers from bias, and we need to be proactive in assessing, you know, the system, how it's designed, the data, whether it's representative, whether there's privacy that's being protected, and whether the proxies for these demographic, you know, features that are being used are appropriate, and whether or not, you know, there's ongoing disparity testing, you know, so that we can ensure that as we test and deploy these systems, these technologies, that we're really assessing whether or not we should we you know they're suffering from both explicit and implicit biases that are embedded,
Yes.
right? And I think that the real powerful thing of these, particularly the guidance, the OMB guidance on how to implement the AI executive order, I think it's really important that, you know, agencies are directed to cease use of AI for agency decision making if they're unable to, if they have identified biases, right,
Yep.
in these models, and they're unable to mitigate them,
Yes,
right?
yep.
So that, to
Yep.
me, you know, is being proactive, really focusing on the data that is you know, being used to implement these technologies, and then taking action to remove them from from the, you know, from decision-making processes if we're unable to mitigate any discrimination and bias that have been identified. So everyone is responsible. Everyone is working together, is directed to work together, you know, across the data and the AI responsible officials, and we're going to get this done.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is such a powerful statement and tribute to this administration when it comes to just making sure that we're constantly assessing our quality of information that we are using, like you said, either for decision making, analog or autonomous, right? But most importantly, that we're looking at the data ecosystem that exists for the federal government and starting as a leader and making sure that we advance a much more equitable system going forward. You know, I think about, you know, one thing that as you were talking that I wanted to bring up, which is the government's role in also enabling more inclusive data sets. Have you thought a little bit about that? Like when we think about, I just spent, for example, like a year and a half on the National Academies of Sciences Research Commission on the use of facial recognition technology in law, by law enforcement. And what's dawned on me is that we probably need more inclusive data sets to help us sort of break the logjam when it comes to differential treatment or potentially disparate impact of these technologies when they're used on people of color. But that requires somebody, right, to create much more inclusive variables when they are constructing these data sets or doing more testing or asking more questions. I always think like maybe more resources to like the National Science Foundation. I mean, I know you're not in that position to talk about it. I swear I'm not putting you on the spot. But do you think that there's a role that government could play in actually creating much more equitable data sets to help us solve some of these problems?
That's you. I think you're reading my mind right here because, yes, I think that is a responsibility, and we just so happen to have an interagency working group that is focused on, addressing the issue of unintended bias in AI with a particular focus on data sets, right? And so that RFI has been put out. It's a working group that involves Department of Defense and some other folks, the White House, et cetera. And it's out right now, until and it's open until May 15th. And it's really soliciting information on, to better understand the data sets and domain areas where there's prominent AI bias, including in government data sets, right? And how do we, engage in, what ongoing efforts are out there to address this unintended bias that are in these data sets that are used in AI and machine learning? And, are there any partnerships within industry, government, or academia? What are the limitations and obstacles to mitigating the bias in these data sets? So we need to better understand, right? The data that's out there, but then also the data that's held and for which the government is a custodian, and what have people found in terms of any biases that exist in that, so that we can address those and make them more inclusive and representative.
Yeah, no, I mean,
Because yeah, without data, we don't have AI, and if we don't address the bias that's in the data, then we're gonna, continue to suffer from bias in algorithms.
I mean, look, I am so with that because I think that might be a solution for us, you know, or at least for the government becoming that holder of variables and, you know, content and information that maybe the private sector doesn't want to actually develop, you know. You know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this question. I don't know if you're familiar, but at Brookings, we're developing an AI equity lab, which is going to look at a lot of things that we talked about on this podcast, but more importantly, sort of help us get to some short tail solutions around some of these high risk areas where AI is being applied, like employment and education. But I have another goal in this, Dominique, and that is to find more people who are what I call hidden figures who will be unhidden when this process is over because they actually have a perspective that may not be thought of. How did a Black woman become the chief data scientist? Accept your qualifications, but what does that feel like? Because you are indeed not necessarily a hidden figure, but a profound part of the leadership of this country. So I'm just curious, like, how do we encourage more students of color, leaders of color, to actually pursue this space?
Well, thank you so much. I mean, Nicole, I have been poured into by so many different people, you know, and supported, and so I just was in the right time and place to occupy this role. But I really believe that my commitment, my personal commitment to using data for equity, is really what put me at the forefront. And this is how I conduct myself in my work, because it's so important. Data isn't a separate thing. It's integral to the problems that we're grappling with in our society, and it's also integral to the solutions that we're developing, right? And so that's why, you know, this administration, my team are so hard at work every single day, and I feel so privileged to be a part of that, you know, to really help harness the power of data and equitable data, and to ensure that the public has the information it needs to hold us accountable to making progress on that commitment to equity. So, you know, I feel like I'm blessed, but yes, there's a power in my position as a Black woman in this role, and I really am committed to, you know, putting myself out there. So thank you for inviting me on this podcast, because I think it's really important to just have people see someone like me occupy this role, and then be able to see themselves in this position just by observing the fact that I'm here. And so I have done a lot of speaking engagements to a number of places, you know, HBCUs and other conferences and stuff, and I really prioritize that as well.
Well, look, when I first met you and you told me your role, I was like, huh? We have a chief data scientist? And I should have remembered that we did, because we've come a long way at OSTP and in the White House in general. But I was, you know, that hug that I gave you, I was so proud to see you in this role, in all honesty, because as you said, it was a privilege for me to actually meet you, because this is a big job that you're doing right now for our country. You
And
know,
you
I just
have a
want
big job too, putting the word out there on
I
podcasts
do.
like this, and doing that research that we need to, you know, it's a partnership. We can't do it all on our own. So we need
That's
folks
right.
like you guys, the Brookings Institute, to do the, you know, continue to do that hard analytic work as well.
Look, and the more that you give us quality data, we could do it so much better. Look, so
Amen.
I am for equitable data, and I'm for quality data any day, because it just makes our jobs a lot easier when we're getting it from the source. And those data sets, you know, dating back to my time using the census data, right, is really good quality data. That really makes a difference, because I think most of us in the research community, we consume your information in ways that make sense for policymakers. So I want to thank you for coming on to the show. Thank you again. This is not the last time, it may be the first, but we're going to keep following all of the great work that you're doing. So thanks, Dominique, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
And for those of you who are listening, you've heard several things mentioned: the OMB, the RFI, the working group. We'll try to put those in our blog that is going to be part of this adjacent episode. You're listening again to Tech Tank Podcast, where we make complex bits into palatable bites, especially when addressing and unpacking technology issues. Please be sure to like this episode, share it with a friend, and visit the Tech Tank blog for more content like this. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Tech Tank, a series of roundtable discussions and interviews with technology experts and policymakers. For more conversations like this, subscribe to the podcast and sign up to receive the Tech Tank newsletter for more research and analysis from the Center for Technology Innovation at Brookings.